Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host David Shee, and today we have a very special episode today because this is fairly urgent for all the Queensland landlords, and we thought that this is something that we need to bring up so that more people are aware of what's going on, and there's a time urgency to this as well, hence the special episode we have. Okay, so but with me today is Jazz, as always, sitting in his lovely Melbourne home. His comfy couch, I'm assuming.
Comfy ball.
Comfy. Okay. That's a good one. So also we've brought on, because it's Queensland related, we've brought on Tom Rivera, one of our favorite PMs in Queensland, let's put it that way, onto this episode with us so that he can give us and our audience a bit more understanding exposures on how this proposed tenancy reform currently sitting with the Palaszczuk government. I should say Queensland government. It's probably going to be easier.
Palaszczuk
government. Apologies on that. So and how that's going to impact the landlords if it does get legislated. Okay, so that's what we'll be covering today for all the Queensland landlords. But before that, Tom, how have you been doing?
Look, we've been doing okay. Hi everyone again. Good to be back. I wonder whether I'm a bit lucky with my portfolio, I guess, and my clients. We have a really small proportion of tenants who are struggling with things in a way that's outside their control. I think largely the government's done a fabulous job so far of offering financial support and other aid for people. Certainly we've been able to take a lot of advantage of that, and I probably have somewhere between 5% and 10% of my tenants who are taking advantage of some sort of assistance to help get them through the next sort of month and then the few months after that. So that's been fantastic.
Okay. No, that's great. That's great to hear. I think, certainly I think it's a tough time for everyone, as Jazz and I have mentioned. And, I know as a property manager, it's definitely very challenging for you guys as well to be able to meet the expectations on both ends, both the landlords and tenants. But I guess, I was going to ask how's Logan Market doing, but no, let's not start that ball, that can of worms, because otherwise the whole episode will be on that.
Don't ask about any markets right now. It's not a good time.
I won't. All right. So let's jump back onto the what the REIQ has provided to us. So I guess to set the background, this happened last Thursday, is it? So it was a government announcement.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through what has happened last Thursday?
Yeah, so roughly last Thursday, just prior to Good Friday on the 9th, the Honourable Minister for Housing, Mick de Brenny, and the Deputy Premier, Jackie Trad, announced a suite of reform measures to protect tenants and landlords, and just housing in general, residential housing, over the coming months. They announced it quite late on a Thursday, and the REIQ had a short response to advise that they would be working closely on the matter regarding what they felt was fair and what needed further discussion. Obviously, these sorts of things generally have, this sort of reform often takes months, if not years, and needs to be accelerated into realistically what's probably less than 2 weeks. So this is all happening very quickly. The REIQ released a statement and followed with a Facebook Live announcement on Tuesday 14th after Easter weekend, advising that although they were largely very, very happy with the Queensland government and the federal response, there were some key items that had been discussed that they were seriously concerned about. And their announcement and sort of my focus is, my research is focused around that. We're obviously going to discuss some what's probably a smallish proportion of what's being considered, and focusing specifically on the things that we don't think are fair and balanced.
Yeah, and there's quite a number of them from I guess I've got the REIQ letter open in front of me, and that's why I think, you know, if any of the landlords or Queensland landlords looked at this, they will understand that it's actually very, very biased to protecting the tenant, and kind of like giving the landlords a bit up on their side, unfortunately. So, and that's why I want to bring you in, and that's the whole reason of this episode, is to promote that awareness, to say this currently is not legislated. We're you know, obviously they're still open for suggestion at the moment, and I guess we're encouraging the landlords to take action, certainly all the Queensland landlords who's owning properties in Queensland, to take action, just to see how we can actually make some changes, hopefully make some changes and get them to have some refining what they have proposed so far, so that it's not so unbalanced on both sides of the scale, isn't it?
Yeah. And I guess I think maybe our complaint comes with the fact that they very much focused on tenants and perhaps not discussed a lot about landlords, and that might not be reflective of what they intend to implement. It might be more so that tenants tend to be more vocal. I can't argue either way as to how accurate that is, but you know, you might end up finding that what they put forward is very fair, but they just haven't discussed it at this stage. So it's a question of, would we take the chances on that, or do we need to come forward and be heard?
Okay. All right. So I guess let's just run through a couple of those items then, in that case, just so that our listeners are aware what has been proposed. So number one, I think it says on here, your tenants will not have to pay back any rent. Now, can you elaborate a little bit more on here on this clause?
So there's been very, very loose discussion on some sort of forced rent reduction, or the REIQ refers to it as a rent waiver. So this is not deferring rent. This is not accruing a debt that is eventually paid back. This would be an amount that you're effectively offering as, charity is a poor word for it, but giving away. And that's something a number of media outlets and government sources have been suggesting. They've been suggesting that landlords, out of the good of their own pockets, give tenants rent reductions. In some situations, I think that's potentially necessary, but the problem is that there's been discussion of making it more than a suggestion, and that's quite scary for a lot of landlords who sort of feel like they're trying to legislate, a loss on their investment, and that's not something that's necessarily been carried across to other industries. You know, they're being very specific to the investment property market, and in particular in our case, Canberra, for example, has a policy in it may not be in place yet, I'm not 100% sure, where they're intending on having landlords reduce the rent by 25%, but they're also offering landlords subsidies on their land tax and I believe rates that are equivalent or near to. So I think that's an example of a fairly considered policy where the tenants are given some relief on living costs without it being at the cost of landlords. So the vast majority of landlords in Australia are mum and dads, not sort of multinational corporations and all that. You know, the people who have the money sitting there to weather a once in a lifetime pandemic. So you can't take from one without taking from the other.
I mean, this one is debatable whether it's the right thing or not. But the next one is I completely disagree with the next one, Tom, which is you cannot ask your tenants for any proof of financial hardship. That is, to me, total BS. You have to put some parameters around that, which is obviously if someone applies for it, you have to check to make sure that they're not lying about it or there's nothing else behind the scenes. But straight up not asking for any proof is a little bit harsh, I think, on the landlords.
I think it's an incredible policy, and I think it goes both ways. Personally, the way I see that affecting my business is that it leaves it open for people to take advantage of the system, which is one thing. People who are not experiencing hardship, who are going to effectively try it on. But it also means that the people who are experiencing hardship, I guess, less able to substantiate. I mean, I imagine those people will be able to voluntarily provide their documents. But if we're not able to implement a formal process to request them and follow that through, then I feel like that could have potential implications on people who deserve the help being either delayed or denied access to it. And that's, I guess that's probably the more important thing there. I'll just mention quickly, and I've literally only in the last 5 minutes seen it. The Office of Debreni has just released a media statement. I've struggled coming back on what they call misinformation on some of those policies. And they're, one of the key points they brought out that I've just scanned through is that they don't feel like they said that tenants would be not allowed. We wouldn't be allowed to ask for hardship substantiation. Funnily enough, he very, very specifically said that in the announcement. But this is politics. So that sounds like something that they're already backtracking on, which is really good news.
Okay, so what you're saying is essentially through the public media announcements, they already started making some amendments or, you know, essentially elaborating more on what they have announced previously. And this is absolutely, and this point has been one of them to say, hey, now we've thought about it, it doesn't make sense. And, you know, we certainly want to make sure that the tenants can support what they claim as being in financial hardship. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's good news, I guess. Hopefully, once that media announcement has come out in full, then IEIQ's announcement may also alter. So just for our listeners at the moment, this podcast is currently recorded on the first day, the 16th. So I think it's important to give accurate timeframes in this case, just so that people know and aware when this is being released and what's the latest today, we should say. But anyway, we don't have that public announcement with us at the moment, so we'll continue to go through with the remainder of the items based on IEIQ. Is there anything else you want to elaborate on that? On that second point, Tom or Jazz?
No, not at all. I think it's a key figure, but it's also really easy to define why it should not exist and the implications of that. So I'm happy with that.
Totally agree on that. You need to provide assistance where required, but not going through and doing the relevant checks, I don't think that's the right thing, personally.
Yeah, it just means it's going to be exploited and abused.
Exactly. And the system always gets exploited. People are going to exploit this thing unnecessarily. So, and if the checks can be put, unless we are talking about a system that is not manageable because we are going to see those many applications, then I get it, but it's too early to say that. So I think the checks should still be done to make sure that that they are actually facing the hardship. And that's easy. All you have to do is basically get a letter from the employer or show the latest pay slips to show that, you know what, yeah, you've taken a 25% haircut or whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, the figure that's being run around at the moment is that rent affordability, and this is what we've calculated on for a long time, but it's quite public right now, is affordability is rent being 30% of your total income. Personally, that can stretch depending on your personal circumstances. For example, young couple, no kids, 30% of income, or single mum with five kids, 30% of income. But that's when people are making hardship applications, that's the general figure that they're looking at working towards, substantiating the income that you had that was affordable and the new income that you have, which is no longer, and the new rent that you need to make it affordable again.
Yeah.
So that's the basic framework that we're looking at working to.
Right. Sorry for jumping over here. David, you know I have to duck out. I'm in a bit of a rush. But just quickly bringing up one more point, which I personally thought was not fair on the landlords, is the refusing the entry for anything other than emergency repairs. What is up with that? I mean, why?
I guess their justification is really just social distancing. It's as simple as that. But the implications of it are pretty dramatic. Probably the worst implication by far is the fact that as these reforms tie together, you could quite easily end up in a situation with a tenant who didn't pay rent for 6 months, putting their landlords under significant financial stress, and then the landlords would be unable to sell the property because no one's able to access it. No valuations, no building and pests, no private inspections, no salespeople. So that's probably the scariest of combination of all of these potential reforms that we're concerned about, because it's maybe a rare occurrence, but it's going to be a significant one for anyone affected. Other potential issues associated with that is as simple as general maintenance. Just for example, if it's not emergency, you know, you could have a tap dripping under your sink, and if that drips for 3 months, it could destroy the kitchen bench and or the cabinetry underneath. And define emergency maintenance. It's not emergency, but if it isn't fixed in a timely manner, it is going to cost you significantly more money. And there's thousands of examples of maintenance that should be completed timely, but tenants would potentially have the right to refuse access for. I've already had one tenant who's firmly asked me not to let their smoke alarm provider through to compliance the alarms. We're currently in discussions with them, but unfortunately right now we're not sure whether we're even able to follow the law in regards to ensuring that the properties are safe.
And that's what I was about to say. This has got a domino effect on the landlord, which will further have an effect on the economy, where some of these things, if not done properly, where you're not letting the property manager or the landlord through the property other than just an emergency repair. Insurance may not cover some of these damages because they are not either reported in the timely manner or the evidence has been lost.
A key component of insurance coverage is that you've acted in the best of your ability to mitigate your own loss. And a number of these potential reforms are legislating against your ability to mitigate your own loss, both when it comes to damage and when it comes to rent arrears. And that opens up a huge question listed in that REIQ list as to what sort of insurance coverage landlords are going to have at the end of this.
Yeah, the effect that it's going to have overall on everyone outside of the tenants regime. Sorry, David, I have to rush out. I'm sure you'll cover up the rest of the points.
Yeah, no worries.
We'll chat at some other stage, but thanks for coming on a short notice anyways.
No worries, Jazz. Talk to you soon. Guys.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue, essentially, because we all know how important landlord insurance is, essentially, for any investors. You know, one of the points it mentioned on that REIQ letter is also that your landlord insurance will not cover you for rent in arrears. Now, what's that one about?
There's the suggestion there that, and that was what I briefly touched on before. Mm. The suggestion is that if you're unable to mitigate your own loss by following the defined legal process, so effectively by the fact that you're not able to evict someone who is not paying their rent, you can't expect your insurer to pick up the slack on that situation. So, I've asked a number of insurers, and none of them can give a clear answer because they don't know either. But if you had a tenant who stopped paying rent for 6 months, one part of it is that the insurers, to my knowledge, are not, and well, the advice I've been given is that they can't pay out during a tenancy where a tenant is not paying rent because you haven't suffered a loss at that stage. And that concerns a number of my clients because they've looked at it and thought, well, if a number of my tenants stop paying rent, then we can't survive. Mm. I think for the vast majority of people, we're going to work together well, and that's not going to come into it. But there will be cases out there where people are going to take advantage of these reforms when they may not be entitled to or deserving of the protections that they provide. And the whole idea of a legal framework is to ensure that in all but the most extenuating circumstances that both parties are protected from people taking advantage of loopholes and the like that is outside of the spirit of the intention of the protection. Mm. And that's what the REIQ is focusing on, is saying that, for example, not being able to ask tenants for their documentation proving hardship, it protects no one, but it creates an opportunity for people to take advantage of the system. Mm. And a number of their recommendations focus on those sorts of points.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why the key message here is basically for everyone, isn't it? What's going to be the best for everyone? Not necessarily just to, you know, to cover up for the tenants or be able to, you know, help them through. Of course, it's going to be a difficult time for tenants who's suffering a hardship of some sort. But at the same time, you know, we also got to think about as landlords, you know, a big component of the rental income is covering the mortgages. Now, if that's being cut off and that's being stopped, then that's going to have a significant, a significant damage to the landlord's cash flow as well. And it will end up being the landlord will have to pay the mortgages themselves or put it on deferral. Now, is putting on deferral the best option? Probably not, because at the end of the day, you know, the interest is still going to get capitalized. So it just means you're delaying in paying it. However, it's still going to be there. You still have to pay it off one day. So it just seems like it's a domino effect, essentially, at the end of the day. And I'm glad that, as you mentioned, there's been public announcements in terms of fine-tuning some of these statements already. But let's just quickly run through the last couple points as well. Okay, so next one. Your tenancy agreement will immediately extend by 6 months if it expires during the six-month freeze on evictions. Okay, so that's an interesting one. basically, you don't need a landlord to give the nod to say yes, you'll keep the tenant. Is that how it's going to work?
You know, it's a perfect example of another strange reform. And if someone came to me and explained the intention and it made sense to me, then I'd be the first person to put my hands up and say, I get it now. That's a great policy, but for all the thinking that I can do on my own and between some associates, we can't understand how this is going to protect a vulnerable tenant without creating a situation for people to take advantage of it. I guess you could argue that if a tenant doesn't pay their rent for 6 months and you're forced to offer them a new six-month renewal, well, you're going to follow the Form 11, Form 12 and eviction process anyway. So they really do need to keep paying their rent. I guess the concern is that you may have landlords who need to sell that property, who need to move back into that property, who are having some serious problems with those tenants. There's just a number of situations where forcing a landlord to issue a renewal where they otherwise wouldn't is going to create a domino effect or could potentially create a negative domino effect. But admittedly, I guess in return too, no doubt there was an intention behind that to protect. There must have been some sort of case study or situation put forward to them where they said that these tenants are going to come out of the six-month COVID situation in severe financial hardship, and then some landlord. And let's not forget that there are a number of landlords and agents out there that don't do the right thing either. So it's very easy for us to pretend that, you know, we need to be protected from the tenants. But the reality is it doesn't.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think a lot of the component really needs to be logical, as you explain, right? A lot of these things, when we read it in terms of the suggested reform, it just doesn't make sense, to be honest. All right, so look, I think this is probably one of the items that hopefully today's public announcement would have refined a bit more and hopefully will make more sense. So we'll stay tuned on that. And then the last but not least, your tenant can break a lease with only 7 days' notice. Could you elaborate a bit more on this?
This one's particularly terrifying at the moment.
That's why I leave it to last.
I'd say the potential consequences are probably not so harrowing as a landlord being in a situation where they can't sell a property that they need to. That's probably your most serious likely consequence of this, of the overall reforms. This is going to be something that if it comes into effect anywhere near the way that they've expressed that they feel that they're intending to put it into use is going to affect a lot of people. There's a long way to say that. At the moment, tenants can break their lease, so they can exit a fixed-term tenancy at any time as long as they need to put the landlord in the same financial position that landlord was in without them having broken the lease in Queensland. I understand some southern states have changed that recently. That generally means covering rent up until the day before a new tenant moves in, paying the let fee and or advertising, if applicable, that the landlord would have had to pay, noting that if the tenant was towards the end of their tenancy, that tends to be prorated, the thinking being the landlord was about to have to pay for that anyway, and also rent reductions. So, for example, if a tenant has 3 months left on their lease and we need to reduce the rent by $10 a week to get the ideal result, the tenant will pay out that rent reduction to the end of the lease. 13 weeks by $10 is $130. As you can imagine, those costs can add up. 1 week's rent doesn't go anywhere near to mitigating the landlord's loss in the situation that a tenant has broken a legal contract and should be liable for damages in any other normal contract situation, but they're looking at legislating against limiting that to a figure that it's really ridiculous. In a good situation, you should take up to 2 weeks to around 2 weeks to find a new tenant. The let fee's generally 1 week's rent on top of that. The average break lease would therefore cost somewhere up to about 4 weeks of rent. So really automatically, based on the average rent around Brisbane, let's just say $350 a week, you're automatically putting a landlord nearly $1,000 out to money that from a legal perspective, they are absolutely entitled to. It's probably not going to break the bank for anyone, but it's a very good example of something that's simply not fair and balanced. I do agree that some measure of protection in a break lease situation may be appropriate right now. Perhaps limiting the rent charge to 1 month, for example. At the moment, tenants can attend tribunal if they feel like the agent has not been mitigating their loss by securing a new tenant. And the general rule of thumb is a month. If they legislated that, then there would be a limitation on it, and that would be fair and equitable. But one week is just simply not appropriate.
Comes back to the whole point why I'm saying this is totally unbalanced, and it's like, you know, both sides of the scale, it's just tipping completely to the one side, right? And unfortunately, that's why, you know, as a landlord, as a Queensland landlord myself, owning a couple of Queensland properties, I think it's important for us to stand out and have our voice heard. And I know that since the IEIQ has put this letter out on Tuesday, there has already been a number of organizations actively promoting it and making sure that people are aware of what's going on. I think one of the way that the IEIQ letter proposed to say, if you are a Queensland landlord and if you're not happy with any of these reforms, which I don't think any landlords will be, then the best way would be for them to actually download a letter template, which is on the IEIQ website. As a landlord, you can simply copy and paste that. It's all being drafted up for you, very, very nicely worded in relation to essentially the 6 points that we have covered earlier today. And it's going to be essentially you can copy and paste that, put it in your email address, and then send it off to the Queensland Premier email along with your own signature signing off on that basis. And essentially, I think that will complete making our landlord's voice being heard and hopefully pleading the Queensland Premier to revisit and refine some of these clauses, which is completely biased to one side at the moment.
David, did you want to provide the link for anyone listening, or is there a...
We will put this on the show notes, essentially, just for that, so that when people actually looked at it, they will be easy for them to access directly to the IEIQ website. So that's what we'll put it on. But Tom, is there anything else that you would like to cover in relation to these, what we covered today?
No, I think that's about it. I think largely... the Queensland, other states and the federal government are doing what I'd like to think is a fabulous job of working very, very quickly to assist people. I mentioned at the start, some of these processes often take years and they're condensed into less than weeks. So I think as a general rule, they should really be congratulated on working very, very hard for the people. And what we're focusing on here really is such a small proportion of what's being done right now to safeguard and protect the Australian population, but it is for a portion of us in the industry and as property owners, it's very, very important that we get a voice here, and that what eventually comes out of it is balanced to protect both the tenants and the landlords in a fair and equitable way.
Yeah, totally. Because, I mean, you know, so many people have to find a place to rent, right? At the end of the day, you know, they need to rely on landlords to be able to provide accommodation as well. You know, they can't just rely on public housing on that. Otherwise, the whole system would collapse. So there's no benefit in terms of upsetting Queensland landlords in the way that I see it, because we are helping to provide accommodations to the tenants who's unable to, you know, in a position unable to buy a house, for example, but still need a good place to live. So, you know, it's part of the ecosystem, and that's why I think IEIQ recognises that and want to ensure that the balance is maintained moving forward with the correct legislation in place. So I think that's why it's important for this message to go out to as many people as possibly can, because there is, as I mentioned, there is a time limit on this. I think the deadline is Wednesday, the 22nd of April, which only leaves us for about a couple more days. And that's why, you know, if you hear this message and if you know someone who's also a Queensland landlord who may not be aware of this message, maybe just flick them the link. Let them know to say, this is happening. We need as many voices as we can. We need as many emails as we can so that the Queensland Premier can understand that the landlord does have a voice, and we want to make sure that the ecosystem is balanced, so therefore we can maintain a sustainable residential property system for Queensland as well.
Well said.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, look, that concludes our special episode today. Tom, as always, thank you very much for coming on with such a short notice as well. And, you know, appreciate your input on this matter. I'm sure we'll bring you back on hopefully in a few weeks' time when there's further consultation being done on this matter, and so that we can give our audiences another update on this.
Absolutely.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Thank you. And look, for all the listeners, if you like this episode, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. As I mentioned before, if you know someone who's going to be impacted by this, or someone who's a Queensland landlord, just make sure you send them the link or send them this episode so they're aware of it. Otherwise, give us a 5-star rating on whatever apps and iTunes, Podbean that you're using. And we'll see you guys again in next week's episode. Spark your fire. Thank you.